Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're looking at something, well, pretty eye-opening in cybersecurity. Think about a phishing attack, but one that doesn't need stolen passwords, doesn't need to hack an account, yet it gets past typical defenses.
Sounds nasty.
It is. We're diving into a critical vulnerability found in Microsoft 365's Direct Send feature. So the big question we're tackling is, how are attackers pulling this off? And, you know, what should you be thinking about for your own organization?
Right. Our goal here is simple, really. We're going to break down the tech behind it, figure out how big this threat actually is, and most importantly, give you some solid, actionable ways to defend against it. We want you to leave this deep dive feeling informed about this pretty tricky situation.
Okay, let's get started. First off, what is Microsoft 365 Direct Send? Like, what's its normal job?
Sure. So Direct Send, it's a totally legitimate feature. It's part of Exchange Online in Microsoft 365. The idea was to let things inside your network think like multifunction printers, maybe some internal applications send emails.
Okay, internal devices talking internally.
Exactly. Sending emails within the same organization. And here's the absolute crucial part, the detail where this whole thing hinges. It was specifically designed not to require authentication.
No authentication. Okay. So that brings us to the heart of it. How can attackers possibly exploit something meant for internal use, especially if they don't need passwords or anything?
Well, that's what's unsettling, isn't it? The sheer simplicity. An attacker really only needs two things, and they're usually public. The organization's domain name.
Easy enough to find.
Right. And valid email addresses for people in that organization.
Which, again, you can often scrape from websites, LinkedIn, maybe old data breaches.
Precisely. It's not difficult information to gather. So the vulnerability isn't some complex hack. It really comes down to that lack of an authentication step for Direct Send. Technically speaking, the way it works is Direct Send uses a sort of predictable address format for routing the smart host. It looks like tenantname.mail.protection.outlook.com. Attackers know this format. So they can use something pretty basic, like PowerShell commands, right from their own machine.
PowerShell.
Yeah. Simple commands. They can craft an email, make it look like it's coming from an internal user, say, joe@company.com, send it to joe@company.com, or maybe to his colleague. And because they send it using that specific Microsoft smart host address.
Ah, so it looks like it's coming through Microsoft's own plumbing.
Exactly. It gets routed through Microsoft's infrastructure.
Yeah.
And because it looks internal and comes via trusted servers, it often slips right past Microsoft's own filters and any third-party email security you might have layered on top. So you might see a command, something like sendmail.smtp server company-com.mail.protection.outlook.com-to-joe@company.com-from-joe@company.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then the subject is maybe new missed fax MSG, and the body has a link, you know, click here to listen now. Standard phishing stuff,
mm-hmm.
but delivered in a very tricky way.
Wow. So they're essentially making Microsoft's own system vouch for a malicious email just by using the right internal pathway. That's clever in a bad way.
It really is. It exploits the inherent trust built into the system for that specific internal communication function.
Is there no check at all? Like, shouldn't something notice this is coming from outside, even if it's aimed at the internal relay?
For this specific Direct Send path, the design assumes internal origin because authentication isn't required. It wasn't built with the expectation that external actors would try to mimic internal device behavior through that specific endpoint. That's the gap.
Okay, so this isn't just a theory then.
Yeah.
What's the actual impact we're seeing? How widespread is this in the real world?
Oh, it's very real.
Hmm.
Security researchers have been tracking a specific campaign using this technique since, I believe, May 2025.
May. So it's been active for a couple of months already.
Yes, over 2 months, and it's ongoing. They've seen it target more than 70 organizations globally. The main focus seems to be companies based in the U.S., but really across various industries, different locations. And it specifically uses that Direct Send smart host vulnerability we've been talking about.
70 organizations. That's significant. So for someone listening right now, maybe worried about their own company, how can they spot this? Are there telltale signs?
Definitely. There are patterns you can look for, both in the emails themselves and in the back-end logs. First, the emails often have fairly generic but urgent-sounding subject lines. Things like caller left via message duration. Something, something. Or fax MSG with a date and time.
Ah, the classic voicemail or fax lures.
Exactly. New missed fax MSG. You've received a new two pages, fax MSG, fax received, attached document, those kinds of things. And the payload is usually a malicious link disguised as, you know, button to listen to the voice message or view the fax. File names might contain fax MSG or listen or VM message.
Okay, so that's what the end user might see. What about for the security teams? What are the technical breadcrumbs?
All right, for the security folks, there are several key indicators. One big one is seeing emails sent from a user to themselves. That's a common tactic here. Also, digging into the email headers, look for user agents indicating PowerShell or maybe command line tools. That's not typical for normal email. Keep an eye on the source IP addresses too. If an internal email seems to originate from an odd IP, maybe a VPN service or from a country you don't operate in, that's a flag.
Like the Ukrainian IPs you mentioned targeting U.S. companies.
Precisely. That kind of geographic anomaly. Also, critically check the email authentication results. Failures in SPF, DKIM, or DMRC for your internal domains are a huge red flag. These protocols are meant to verify sender identity. Mismatched tenant IDs in the headers can also be an indicator. And then there are specific known bad IPs and domains, indicators of compromise, or IOCs. We mentioned IPs like 139.28.36.230 and others in that 139.28.x.x range. And malicious domains like voicy091b.firebaseapp.com or mv4lh.bsff.es. Seeing traffic to or from these is obviously bad news.
And the lack of corresponding logins, right? Email activity without someone actually logging in.
Exactly. If you see emails apparently sent from an internal account, but no record of that user logging in around that time, especially from an unusual location, that fits this attack profile perfectly.
It really is fascinating, though, how effective this is at bypassing defenses. Can you just break down why it works so well? What makes it so dangerous compared to, say, a standard phishing email from a random Gmail account?
Sure. There are a few key reasons it's so potent. First, and maybe most importantly, the emails look internal. They seem to come from colleagues. That immediately lowers people's guards.
Right. You trust emails from your own domain more.
Naturally. Second, they're routed through Microsoft's own trusted infrastructure. This gives them a cloak of legitimacy. Email filters are less likely to scrutinize messages coming through known, trusted relays. Third, as a result, internal-to-internal mail often gets less security scanning applied than external mail does. It's assumed to be safer.
An assumption this attack exploits.
Absolutely. Fourth, the authentication bypass. No need for stolen credentials, which is often a hurdle for attackers. Fifth, it leverages Microsoft's sender reputation. Blocking Microsoft's own IPs isn't really feasible, so the attackers benefit from that high reputation. And another really worrying aspect is the low barrier to entry. You don't need sophisticated hacking tools.
Just PowerShell and some public info.
Pretty much. No account compromise needed. This makes it super easy to scale up and hit lots of targets. And think beyond phishing. This technique could easily be adapted for sending massive amounts of spam, or maybe even for business email compromise trying to trick finance departments into wiring money, that sort of thing.
So it's not just the loophole itself, it's how it weaponizes trust. It uses Microsoft's infrastructure, the internal email assumption. It turns convenience into a weapon.
That's a perfect way to put it. It's manipulating legitimate systems by understanding how they trust each other. Very clever, very dangerous.
Okay, this is clearly a serious threat. So the crucial part. What can organizations actually do about it? How do you defend against something this sneaky? What are the immediate steps and maybe longer-term strategies?
Right, let's talk defense. Immediately, security teams need to be actively monitoring those email headers. Look specifically for external IP addresses showing up in the routing path of emails that are supposed to be purely internal.
So check the path the email took.
Yes, and set up anomaly detection rules. Flagging emails sent from a user to themselves is a good start. Also, geographic monitoring get alerts if internal mail suddenly seems to originate from an unexpected country or IP range. And I can't stress this enough. Really scrutinize those email authentication results.
Yeah.
SPF, DKIM, DREC. Failures on internal domain email should be investigated immediately.
Okay, those are things teams can do right now. What about more strategic long-term defenses?
Long-term, you probably need to look beyond just the built-in Microsoft filtering. Consider enhanced third-party email security solutions.
But wait, if the attack uses Microsoft's trusted servers, how much better can a third-party filter be? Isn't it still seeing a trusted source?
That's a fair point. But advanced filters don't just rely on source reputation. They use more sophisticated techniques. Deeper content analysis, looking for known malicious link patterns, behavioral analysis. They might flag an email that looks internal but came via an unexpected external IP, or notice the specific way the PowerShell user agent appears, or detect anomalies that simpler filters miss. It's about adding layers of intelligence.
Okay, so more advanced analysis makes sense. What else?
User education is huge. Employees need to understand that even internal-looking emails can be malicious. Training them to spot these newer, more sophisticated phishing attempts is critical. Network segmentation can also play a role. Can you restrict which internal devices or servers are even allowed to use direct send? Limit it only to those that absolutely need it. Lock it down. And finally, regular security audits. Specifically, review your Microsoft 365 and email security configurations. Make sure things like direct send are configured as tightly as possible.
Stepping back a bit, thinking about the bigger picture, this vulnerability really seems to highlight a potential blind spot, doesn't it? Relying too much on the perimeter, maybe. How's the wider industry reacting?
It definitely is a wake-up call. It shows that focusing only on external threats isn't enough. You need visibility and control within your environment, too. We're seeing organizations worldwide starting to reassess their email security posture because of things like this. They're realizing that internal routing needs scrutiny, too, and the cybersecurity industry is responding. You see more services offering, like deep Microsoft 365 configuration audits, specifically looking for these kinds of gaps. There's more focus on advanced threat detection using 24/7 monitoring, looking for those subtle anomalies in email patterns we talked about. Multi-layered filtering is becoming standard practice. Plus, renewed emphasis on employee training, phishing simulations, and having solid incident response plans ready just in case. I think the core takeaway from this whole deep dive is pretty clear. Even features designed for internal convenience, if they're not locked down properly, can become attack vectors. Security can't just be a wall around the outside anymore. It has to permeate the inside, too.
It really does change the game. Which leaves us with a final thought, I suppose. In this constant push for features that make work easier, more convenient, how do we strike that balance? How do we build systems that are both functional and resilient when the very tools meant to help us can potentially be turned against us like this? It's something worth thinking about in your own digital world, that constant tightrope walk between usability and security.